Oh boy, it is Wednesday, and it is January the 27th, 2016 of this infernal year, and it's all good. It's all good. So, as those one or two people who read my blog or listen to my podcast know, I'm kind of a weird fish. On the one hand, I do suspect that there are many people, folks, humans, whatever. When I say many, they're still a minority, but there are some people who more or less think they run the world, and who knows, maybe they do. I don't really believe in the great Rothschild banking conspiracies. They might exist, but they seem very difficult to maintain, and if such a thing did exist, then in some sense we're screwed because they must have superpowers. Because there's nothing particularly special about us. I mean, yes, we might be the generation of the overshoot, but every other generation had courageous people. And to believe that the Rothschilds have been able to do what they've done for several hundred years, or the Jewish cabal, or whatever you want to believe in, to do that without any great weakness is to believe they're superheroes, or they're supervillains, or they have superpowers, or whatever. And I don't believe in superpowers. So for me to accept any theory, it has to have at least a feature of plausibility. On the other hand, if you were to say, Dan, our world is run by technocrats, by people who probably from the time they were in high school all the way up until adulthood wanted to do one thing and one thing only, and that is run the world. And you know what? They were convinced that running the world was a social good, and you can't let the little people run their own lives. I mean, God forbid we let Dan run his own life. I mean, I only have 3 degrees and whatnot, but shit, don't let me make my own fucking choices because I certainly don't have the fucking education to do it. And yeah, you know, that last comment was kind of snarky, but that's my point, is I don't believe in conspiracies, but I do believe in technocrats. Why? Because when I was in school, I was exposed to them. Technocrats basically spend some time in government, and then often they spend time in academia or the corporate world, and they basically shuffle between those three: government, corporate world, academia, government, corporate world, academia, some combination thereof. But those are the three legs of that fucking stool. And as a group of people, you know, they're usually pulled from, I would say, the upper classes of most of these nations. And if they're not pulled from the upper classes, they're certainly channeled through the upper class educational system. So, yeah, do poor people get into Yale and Harvard? Sure they do. Sure they do. But the idea that poor people ultimately end up as technocrats, you know, without being on some level indoctrinated, I think is kind of ridiculous. It's almost impossible to avoid. It's a well-studied topic in psychology. You know, nobody really gets away with avoiding some level of dissonance when they do things that are a contradiction. So no, I don't believe in these great grand cabals, but I do have a belief that we live in a relatively finite number of classes as far as society goes, and America is very much a two-class society now, and I say two-class, it's fuzzy around the edges. Like, if you're part of the rich class, I suppose there's a point at which you drop so low you start to wonder if you're still rich. And I suppose if you're the hoi polloi like myself, sometimes you wonder if you could ever make enough money to go beyond that. And within those two groups, yeah, there's some stratification. But tell you the truth, America has more or less become a two-class society at this point. And the question you have to ask yourself is, why would the ruling class, the oligarchic class, whatever the fuck you want to call it, why would they do the crazy, nutty ass shit that they do? So I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but I will explain to you a theory that I think might be true. And you could call the narrative, because properly, if it were a theory, I would have some reliable means of experimenting. But honestly, I don't believe any of us at my level do. I think that we are very much, as I've told people before, goldfish, goldfish in the goldfish bowl surrounded by TV sets. I mean, we want to escape it and we want to say we know the truth, but come on. Just because you read fucking Zero Hedge doesn't mean you know the truth. So here's a theory. Somewhere between 1965 and 1970, and certainly within the decade of the 1960s, I think people, you know, technocrats, the people who believe they run the world, I say believe because I don't think anyone really does run the world. It's kind of an illusion. But the people who believe they run the world noticed a problem, and that was that, you know, Hubbard, for example, but others who'd predicted the obvious fact that natural resources on planet Earth are finite, and that would probably include oil. And here's the deal. For you abiotic people who want to talk about Titan and all the methane, I'm at peace with the idea that if you want to debate whether or not oil is biotic or abiotic is fine. But for you to conceive of an infinite cornucopia, you have to convince me that there is an incredibly powerful fusion reactor at the center of the Earth that is constantly producing new carbon atoms out of fucking nowhere, new hydrogen atoms out of fucking nowhere. All the components for oil and methane comes from nowhere. If it doesn't come from nowhere, it comes from the Earth. And what you have to tell me, okay, for this abiotic engine, how much shit is there and how much is left? Because if you're going to contend it's infinite or it's another 1,000 years, then you have to explain to me, why the fuck are they boiling tar sands? Why the fuck are we drilling holes 7 miles below the ocean surface? Is this part of the great oil cabal disinformation campaign to fucking pummel us with ridiculousness? Because really, there can't be anything more stupid than fracking or tar sands or drilling these god-awful holes at places we can't fucking repair. Yeah, do we all remember what the fuck happened in the Gulf of Mexico, or are some of you too fucking stupid? It was just a few years ago. Oh, Dan, it was 6 years ago. Oh, my God, it was 5 or 6 years ago? Holy fuck. I expect you to remember so much. So no, I don't really believe the oil companies are so evil that they're stupid. I don't believe that they're actually going to do incredibly stupid things to destroy themselves. And so no, I don't believe whether oil comes from, you know, fucking plants or comes from an abiotic process, whether it's the lube or the fucking seismic fucking plates or, you know, the continental plates or whether it's fucking unicorn farts. I don't know. Ultimately, I have my own beliefs based upon what I've read. If you want to believe it comes from any of those things, fine. But where I draw the line for people, and I know it requires common sense, is this idea that it's infinite or nearly so, or that there's so much oil that even if it is finite, it's not nearly finite enough. Folks, whether we like it or not, oil at $100 a barrel, or whatever real or nominal term you want to use, because truly a dollar isn't really what we think it is either, is it? But oil at $100 a barrel is in many ways impossible for our world economy to consume. Oil at less than $100 a barrel is almost impossible to produce at this point. And we're soon going to find that out. I mean, it is true, a lot of folks are still producing, and they're producing at levels that are essentially causing high yield credit and derivatives to blow up in the energy field. So listen, we're between a fucking rock and a hard place, and this is literally Hubbard's rocky plateau. If Hubbard is right, within 12 to 18 months, we're either going to see an incredible spike in the price of oil almost overnight, or we're on the other side. There is a third possibility, and that is somebody invents a true substitute for oil, or the evil oil cabal releases an invention that was invented already. I don't believe these things, but maybe, you never know. But there are limited options at this point. I'm inclined to believe that there's probably a few more epicycles in this fucking rocky plateau. So who the fuck knows? Maybe there is one more oil price spike. I wouldn't be surprised if the next time around we don't end up nationalizing oil production, but that, you know, could happen too. So the conspiracy theory I'm going to describe, and I've given you some preface for, is based upon this idea that in the 1960s, technocrats in general, and some of this is not secret. I mean, like the Club of Rome thing, the limits to growth thing. You know, some of these technocrats are very upfront about it and frankly say things I would agree with. The Earth is not infinite. I agree with that. We probably can't have as many people as we'd want on planet Earth. I think that's probably true. I seriously doubt the Earth is meant to have many more than what we had historically, which is between 1 and 1.5 billion people. So at 7 billion people where we are now, or 8 or 10 where we're supposed to be within a few decades, the Earth probably doesn't do so well with that many people, and we probably do run up against limits, real resource limits. Now, I don't think the solution is government. I actually think the problem was created by government. But yeah, you know, if you're going to make the argument that the Earth is finite, I believe that. It seems self-evident and doesn't require a great deal of debate. So if in the 1960s you saw these things coming, and if you were a technocrat who was interested in maintaining the American century world hegemony, then there are things you might do. And the entire conspiracy could be called, if you want to, the soft landing. Because if you see this coming, you have a finite set of choices. You can simply, you know, let it happen and shit fucking put things into the hands of the universe and just don't worry. Now, of course, by creating the monetary economy we created, we were actually creating problems for ourselves. We were pulling demand forward. That's much of what happened in the 20th century, was pulling forward people who were born, who probably wouldn't have been born for hundreds of years later. But again, the physical manifestation of pulling demand forward is you get more people. Let's just be fucking honest about that. You may be a intelligent, highly reasoned fucking libertarian, but I can promise you, for people who don't have your education, more money means more children in a lot of cases. Certainly more sex, which often results in more kids. So if you were part of this group of people and you were having these very reasoned, common sense discussions, what should we do? What is to be done? You might have come up with the following scheme, and here's the scheme I think we have in America. And much of it happened under Nixon, and I don't think that was accidental. I think, you know, it was once said that only Nixon can go to China, but ultimately I feel like it took a Nixon to convince what was left of, I don't know, the American middle class to fucking give up on the American middle class. I think it took a Nixon to convince them that things that were insane could actually be okay. And I'm not talking about fucking price controls. That was ridiculous. I'm actually talking about things like, you know, meeting with Kaiser Permanente and forging out managed care medicine. This happened under Nixon. I'm talking about creating the EPA that more or less has a purpose of doing one thing, and that is shuttering coal plants these days. That happened under Nixon. Opening China happened under Nixon. You say, well, that was all about peace. No, I mean, it was partly about pivoting against the Soviets. But really, when you think about it, opening China was one of those things you might have done. Like, say, you know what? If we want to buy ourselves some time on the other side of this fucking oil curve, why don't we fucking open up some slave territory? And in some ways, the opening of China was really about one thing, and that is having a massive slave territory to deflate the prices of goods and services, to essentially act as a deflator. The ultimate deflator was China. If we really admit that to ourselves, that's what China was. These days, China might play the same purpose again, but it won't have the same effect. Back then, it had that effect. Under Nixon, we also saw the first beginnings of what I would call the expansion and super expansion of consumer credit. And you say, well, Dan, what does credit cards and consumer credit have to do with this? Well, it created, in many ways, a kind of flexible zone. In some ways, consumer credit for the world economy since 1970 has been like airbags. It isn't to say consumer credit can hide the fact that our economies are collapsing. It's more like it can slow down the impact. So people can have their credit card, and instead of feeling like the world ends today, maybe it ends next year. And maybe it doesn't end catastrophically. Maybe it's just sort of by the slices, you know, by the numbers. So whammo bammo, one day you wake up and you're homeless. So consumer credit was part of this picture too. I remember as a kid seeing my mom use a credit card, you know, maybe not the first time, but it felt like it. And it's like I was asking my mom what that thing was, and it's like she didn't even know how to describe it to a 7 or 8 year old kid. It's like, I don't know. You know, this little plastic rectangle. Computerization, which again I don't think was a conspiracy, although frankly people should know much of the computer revolution, in sarcastic quotes, was the result of DARPA and defense spending. People should know that. But the computer revolution helped to offset some of the impacts because, again, it injected a leverage into the system and injected a way to conserve costs. I mean, computerization can improve productivity, so you do get a benefit. It isn't infinite. It isn't forever. But it's for a while. And that's what you want. When you want to have a soft landing, and that's what this conspiracy would be about, orchestrating a soft landing of human population collapse, you know, yeah, computerization could help with that. I also believe that, frankly, the global warming, you know, climate change fear-mongering is part of this. Because, listen, as people go through the cycles of oil appreciation and collapse, and they experience Hubbert's Rocky Plateau, people are going to get angry, crazy, because it's kind of a crazy-making thing. But if you give them, you know, global warming, you say, hey, you know, yeah, prices are going up, but you know what? That's good because it means we'll drive less, and that's good for the planet. So you can pummel people with the guilt of using fossil fuels while not having an adult conversation about the fact that fossil fuels are probably not infinite and we're probably at the bottom of the oil barrel at this point, for all intents and purposes. And last but not least is the petrodollar and the closing of the gold window. You know, when Nixon closed the gold window, in many ways he was beginning the final stage of the paradigm that we were in and we're still in. I mean, the final stage of this paradigm in many ways started with Nixon. If he closed the gold window and Kissinger established what is now known as the petrodollar, but petroleum-based dollar trading. So basically, by the time you get to the 1970s, if you want to trade oil, you're also purchasing dollars. And when I say purchasing dollars, you're literally giving America something for nothing. We'll print money for you to use to buy oil, and you know, that is so expensive for us to do. And in return, we're going to get relatively stable oil prices and all kinds of other stuff. Now, of course, the agenda I just described is kind of a self-serving agenda, because I don't think it really speaks to the future of China or India or Europe. In fact, in many ways, this kind of an agenda, you know, it's not, it's kind of duplicitous. It's kind of, you know, two-faced. You know, I'm sure that there are Americans in governments, and I'm sure there are Americans in our financial system who would like to say that what we do as Americans is good for everybody, but it really, really isn't. Like, you know, we print money and we think that's good maybe for everybody, but it isn't. Ultimately, when we print money, we make the prices of goods and services go up. So while it might be true that there is some moderate expansion in some economies, generally speaking, the increase in monetary scale has dwarfed, not just recently, but really since 1970, any increase in economic growth. And I would add one other thing. Although this didn't happen back then, I would think this was the cherry on the top. In fact, who knows? Maybe he was being groomed. But, you know, I remember reading an article by Alan Greenspan, and it was published in the late 60s, and it was published, you know, ostensibly as a collection of objectivist essays, which means, you know, quasi-libertarian to some extent. But bottom line, it was an essay about gold, and Alan Greenspan was defending gold. And of course, he was younger back then. I mean, I don't know, 30s or whatever, you know, so maybe 40s. So maybe back then he was all crazy about gold because he was young and crazy. But Alan Greenspan, when he became chairman of the Federal Reserve in the 1980s, really in many ways established the final propaganda model of the U.S. economy. He basically re-engineered the core statistics, things for measuring unemployment, inflation, you name it. He re-engineered the way that we established GDP. And he provided the basic mechanisms that every central banker could use from his time going forward to manipulate, control, and bamboozle, you know, the U.S. economy, but frankly, the world economy as well. Now, all of this, in my opinion, might not even fit together into a coherent whole, which means that what I've just described might be a series of completely independent things that just happened to happen, you know, in that period of human history. And I think that would be valid too. But I still think they ultimately draw from the same source, which is, how do you manage catastrophic collapse? And catastrophe is a mathematical problem. It isn't a qualitative problem. It has to do with discontinuous functions. How do you create the illusion of continuity through a series of discontinuous functions? I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. But in some ways, this is what they were trying to do. So even if there were no conspiracy, and frankly, I don't think there was, I think it was more just a general notion of things that had to be done. And again, I'm proposing this as a narrative, not a theory, because I'm not even sure it's true. It's just simply one of the narratives that allows me to avoid the pitfalls of the global cabal conspiracy theory, because I'm left with very few options at this point. Either I posit there's some reason or logic left in the world, especially at the levels where we'd want it, or we're essentially looking at a generalized human madness. And that latter statement is really what I'll probably settle on as the days and weeks, you know, transpire, and as we see some of the first pillars of smoke in the U.S., I'll probably end up settling on the idea that it really is just madness, generalized madness. There is no plan. There is no strategy. What we are really seeing is the complete and total mental collapse on some level of human civilization. We have lost our minds. What we do these days is crazy. Trump is crazy. Hillary Clinton is crazy. These leaders we call leaders are crazy. And I don't care if they're in the U.S. or in Russia or China. For the most part, they're all pretty fucking insane. And the solutions they're proposing sound crazy from one day to the next. They don't sound sane. They don't give me the sense that there's some plan. It all seems pretty crazy. The closest narrative I can come up with is the one I just described, and I'm not even sure I'm happy with it. Because even if you posit that these folks thought they could manage the crash of human civilization, they saw the ramp up, they saw the numbers back in the 60s, and they believed they could manage the collapse. And I don't mean the economic collapse. I'm literally talking about the collapse of human population. Like, that's what they were probably concerned about. But even if that were true, and even if that were a real narrative that really happened, there is so much hubris baked into that. There's so much of this, you know, belief that humans are capable of being gods, or that gods are even things we should aspire to be. So that's my half-baked conspiracy theory for Wednesday, and you know, I'll just leave it at that.